Welcome to Journal Club for March 15th, 2025. I'm Malcolm Diggs. In today's paper, the authors walk us through some of the surprising ways that climate scientists are able to track environmental changes throughout history. Today's episode is hosted by Dr. Sean Hayward.
Imagine you are a climate scientist poring over yearly air pollution data. As you work your way backward through time, you find the data growing thinner, eventually disappearing altogether. You wonder, how was the air quality in 1870? If only there was a way to find out. You have two landscape paintings hanging on your wall. The color of the sky is slightly different in each one. Could this be the missing piece? Could paintings help us understand the environmental effects of industry? In this article, researchers took a look at four types of non-traditional data to illustrate their potential applications and the unique challenges they present. In this episode of Journal Club, we'll explore how scientists could use these non-traditional data sources to understand long-term climate change. We'll also look at how one of these sources complements and compares to modern tools. But before we get to that, we need to understand a gap that exists in the field of climate science. Climate change represents a significant threat to our planet and our species. We're constantly developing new technologies to study our impact on the environment. We only have high-resolution data for the last century or so. Before that, we're left with paleoclimate tools like tree rings, and isotopes. These provide us with highly valuable information, but only allow us to study changes on longer timescales. Think 10,000 years at a time. We would like to connect long-range paleoclimate data with hyper-specific modern data. But that's the gap I was talking about. This gap hinders our ability to understand specific environmental changes in the past and establish clear baselines for evaluation. This article covers four types of non-traditional data: ship logs, business and personal records, archaeological and paleoclimatology proxies, and landscape paintings. Let's take a look at them. Ship logs. Beginning in the 16th century, naval expeditions from Europe recorded extensive weather information, including rainfall, sea surface temperature, atmospheric conditions, and sea ice extent. Unfortunately, these logs are inconsistent. The earliest of them are subjective descriptions of the weather, but by the mid-19th century, there had been substantial progress in standardizing thermometer and barometer measurements. Digitizing these records is extraordinarily labor-intensive, but they have already proven useful in studying sea ice conditions and storm patterns across the globe. Business and personal records. Diaries describe vegetation and bird migration patterns. Records of cherry blossom viewing parties in Japan tell us about the spring mean temperatures. And fishery catch data provides information on marine ecosystem health. These kinds of records are subjective and require extensive validation, particularly in the case of personal diaries, whereas business records are generally more reliable. Archaeological and paleoclimatology proxies. The paleo record has shown that large-scale environmental shifts often coincided with historical events. The rise and fall of civilization has been linked to droughts, extended cold periods, etc. While this information does not typically increase our ability to measure any specific environmental metric, it may help to provide clues and context for understanding climate change in pre-modern periods. Landscape paintings. We alluded to this at the beginning of the episode, and it's perhaps the most dubious of the data suggested by the authors. Let's take a deeper look at this one. Since the time of cave paintings, we have depicted our interactions with nature, often in the form of hunting scenes. The first true landscape paintings without human figures date all the way back to 1500 BC. However, stylization in pre-Enlightenment artwork makes paintings particularly unwieldy data sources for scientists. Landscape painting in a realist style came into its own in the Netherlands in the 17th century, where artists developed new techniques to accurately depict weather and light. The Romanticism and Impressionism of the following centuries, combined with a decline in religious painting, furthered the popularity of landscape art. In many instances, the artists of this period were also encouraged to study the basics of biology and topography. The paintings they produced have allowed researchers to develop deeper insights into the presence of flora and fauna, weather conditions, atmospheric phenomena, land cover, and even glacier health. In a different study, researchers analyzed paintings by Turner and Monet across their respective careers. they found that the stylistic changes closely mirrored what might be expected during the Industrial Revolution, from higher concentrations of atmospheric aerosol, tiny particles suspended in the air, coming from natural sources or human activity. Researchers can point to these paintings as supporting evidence for an increase in air pollution before the availability of reliable measurements. However, when applying the contents of a painting to quantitative science, we often have no means of confirming what is a realistic reproduction and what is exaggerated with artistic intent. Our current tools for studying aerosols are fortunately much more robust. Aerosol optical depth, or AOD, is the metric for measuring the density of aerosols in the atmosphere. The AOD is determined by measuring the amount of light scattered or absorbed by aerosols. In other words, how much direct sunlight is prevented from reaching the ground? Lower values below 0.05 indicate a clear sky, whereas an AOD above 2 or 3 indicates a high particle concentration. The AOD is measured globally through an array of satellites equipped with radiometers, sensors that measure the intensity of radiant energy. By comparing how the AOD changes at various wavelengths of light, these satellites can also determine the angstrom exponent, a measure of particle size. When the effects of aerosol are substantially different for red and blue wavelengths, the resulting angstrom exponent is higher. Lower exponent values typically indicate natural aerosols, such as sea spray or mineral dust, whereas higher values often equate to smoke or industrial pollution. In the context of public health, particle size at ground level, where most of us live, is particularly important. This is referred to as particulate matter, or PM. PM is hard to measure from space because satellite measurements of AOD are sensitive to the entire column, from the ground all the way to the sensor. But researchers have been able to integrate the AOD with a chemical transport model, a computer simulation of atmospheric chemistry, to give reliable data about surface-level air pollution. So how is the data from these various satellites compiled? Since 2004, NASA has made use of an algorithm called Deep Blue to analyze the datasets provided by the network of satellites and calculate an accurate global AOD. This is not to be confused with the IBM Deep Blue supercomputer from the 90s. Validation of this data is then completed by cross-checking through the Aerosol Robotic Network, or AeroNet, a ground-based network of sun photometers, a device for measuring light. These sensors are able to calculate the AOD by comparing the light they receive with what you would expect in an atmosphere with no aerosols. AeroNet data is actually much more accurate than most satellite datasets, but due to the fact that AeroNet is point-based and has relatively sparse coverage, it cannot be used to measure aerosol density globally, and in this context is primarily used for validation. Another function of AeroNet which is proving to be increasingly valuable is the single scattering albedo, or SSA. SSA is a measurement of how much light is scattered by aerosol particles, the scattering coefficient, in comparison to how much light is unable to reach the ground, the extinction coefficient. In other words, how much light is scattered back to space and how much is actually being absorbed by the aerosol particles. This information is crucial if we want to understand the broader impacts of aerosols on climate change. A higher SSA value means that the particles are actually retaining heat in the Earth's atmosphere, as in the case of smoke particles, whereas a low value means that the particles are actually reflecting heat, as in the case of sea spray. Our understanding of SSA is still evolving. For example, in another recent study, researchers doing fieldwork in the Himalayas found that SSAs are less dramatically impacted by absorption than previously thought, with overall particle size distribution and the effects of scattering playing a much bigger role. The results of this study may have a significant impact on future climate models and how we measure the effects of aerosols globally. Fieldwork like this requires researchers to directly collect samples from specific locations, helping us better understand the data provided by global networks. For each of the types of non-traditional data presented in this article, modern technology is undoubtedly more effective, more precise, and more thorough. Each of these kinds of historical data requires extensive verification and a deep understanding of their context to account for their biases, inconsistencies, and limitations. However, in a pitch-black room, even the smallest candle can be a blessing. While this non-traditional data is challenging and sometimes controversial, with careful application it can help us to bridge the gap between the paleo record and modern climate science. With the growing threat of environmental change, we must take advantage of every bit of knowledge we have available to us. The use of modern instruments to understand climate change from the perspectives of biology, chemistry, engineering, and physics is undeniably valuable and important. But we should not ignore the potential for future integration with anthropology, archaeology, folklore, and even art history. To our surprise, after we have sent satellites to space and taken extensive, detailed measurements, we must once again return to the natural landscapes that have inspired artists for millennia. In other words, landscape paintings might not be able to offer us much in the way of specific scientific data about aerosol emissions, but perhaps they might better serve as a reminder that continuous study is necessary if we want our planet to still have landscapes worth painting. For more information on how the authors of this article contextualize the three other types of non-traditional data I mentioned earlier, please check out the PDF. Here today, and hopefully tomorrow, I'm Sean Hayward. Thanks for tuning in to Journal Club.
Today's episode of Journal Club was written and performed by Dr. Sean Hayward. It was produced by Luis Lopez. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Digg signing off. See you tomorrow.